The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins.
People feel they're under siege. They are being picked on. When you look at the cities the president has named, all of those cities have declining crime rates, and all of them have black mayors. There's the racial element that he's race dog whistling here.
And it's a sad case when you have National Guardsmen patrolling streets like in Georgetown or whatever, or central Washington, D.C., which is quite active, quite thriving, restaurants and everything, businesses often those. And now they're strapped with pistols on leg holsters. These are largely weekend people who train maybe once a month. Many of them not from urban areas. Many of them would be frightened by what might happen on the streets. This is a disaster waiting to happen. And the idea of sending the National Guard to Baltimore or Chicago is beyond outrageous for similar reasons.
We've got a fascist administration that is incapable of acknowledging the legitimacy, the validity, and the centrality of FEMA, whether FEMA should even exist.
Look, the Democratic brand right now has about the appeal with the American voter as the Cracker Barrel rebrand has with the American consumers. Bad, bad, bad. What are you doing? Oh, my goodness gracious. What are we talking about here in terms of big party registration changes in the key swing states? Let's look at the key four swing states that, in fact, do keep track of registration by party. Look, the Republican Party is in their best position at this point in the cycle since at least 2005. The bottom line is this, Jessica Dean. When it comes to party registration, Republicans have made massive gains compared to 8 years ago. They are in their best position in these key four swing states dating back at least 20 years. You have to go back at least 20 years, at least in the case of Nevada, longer in North Carolina and Pennsylvania. So Republicans looking pretty gosh darn good, at least when it comes to party registration. And we'll see what happens down the road. But at this point, as I said at the beginning, the Democratic brand is in about as good a position as the Cracker Barrel rebrand. It is bad, bad, bad for the Democrats.
No wonder. Look at the policies they're out there pushing. I didn't even get into the Cracker Barrel thing last week. A few of us joked about it over the weekend. But what is going on? I mean, you can't get more Midwestern than that establishment. And yet you've got some woke, you know, corporate officials somewhere saying, hey, yeah, let's just get rid of what's worked and make sure that we're woke. And it never, never works. And even though the polls tell, they're screaming at Democrats. People want safety and peace in cities. People don't mind seeing the National Guard. The National Guard being there frees up policemen to go to the crime areas, to clean up the streets. And you've got people saying, despite what you're seeing, never mind what you're seeing with your eyes, they're saying there's no problem in our big cities. Yet crime is down. It's perfectly safe. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this rainy day. Can you still see the drops on my suit coat? My driver pulling up the limo just outside didn't have an umbrella on him, so I had to run through the rain. No, just kidding. I don't have a driver, but I did tell the students this morning I don't believe in umbrellas. I believe if it's raining, you've just got to deal with it. It's rain from heaven above. It's a glorious thing, particularly, by the way, in August. And the campuses look so beautiful this summer. Usually by this point in the year, it's parched, it's brown. But I'm sure what was getting brown is going to be looking green again tomorrow morning. So very refreshing indeed. Listen to CNN as they try to tell you that there's no problem with crime in D.C. or otherwise. In the week beginning August 12, the first full day the Trump administration had control of the Metropolitan Police Department, Property crimes dropped roughly 19% compared to the week before. The violent crime dipped. It just dipped a little bit, about 17%. Just a little dip in the statistics. The headline, by the way, Trump's D.C. takeover produces moderate drop in crime and huge spike in immigration arrests. So the crime, it hasn't really affected that. But really, what we're concerned about are the immigrants, the illegal immigrants being arrested. I was telling the news gatherers this morning how isn't it nice to get tweets from Reuters saying that the Kilmar guy, I forget his name, but the one that got deported to El Salvador, Reuters is there to make sure that you know he was wrongfully deported. You know, the Maryland man, remember that story? What is it with these sources, these talking heads? It's as if they go off to journalism school, and the first thing they hear is, you defend the criminals. No matter what they've done, you defend them. That's your job. If you work for Reuters or CNN, your job is to defend the thugs. Always, always, always. It's so predictable. You know where they're going to come down. You know how they're going to report it. It's the same all the time. CNN says those trends vary widely by types of crimes, however. While robberies and car break-ins were down by more than 40%, other thefts were flat week to week. And there was a 6% increase in burglary cases. So here's CNN to tell you what your eyes know is a lie. No police. Police told to stand down. Well, then you've got the thugs roaming the streets with weapons. But there you've got the MSNBC guy saying that, you know, these National Guard guys, they're not from urban districts. And so most of them are just trained on the weekends. I mean, this is a disaster in waiting. And meanwhile, Democrat approval ratings are plummeting. Listen to this. As it happens, the truth bomb, it's dropped on MSNBC, but it's like the panel there is completely unaware of what's happening. This is not regarding D.C. It's with respect to Baltimore, which is not that far behind D.C. in terms of violence and crime. Clip one.
What historically has been Baltimore's greatest challenge? Why has Baltimore had a crime problem over the past three, four decades?
Well, I think oftentimes Baltimore's had a neglect problem, you know, and I think about Baltimore used to be a city of 920,000 people. Baltimore is now a city of just under 600,000. In fact, if you look at the past few decades, Baltimore's had one of the most precipitous drops in population that we have seen in our country.
That's a city just up the road from D.C., Baltimore. I mean, they've lost like a third of their population, maybe more. I didn't get the exact number. You can listen, rewind and listen to it again. People are leaving in droves because it's dangerous. It's unsafe. And here comes President Trump, and he wants to restore law and order to our cities. And so those radicals on the radical left side, call him a fascist, for just upholding the law, they're so out of touch with ordinary Americans that are terrified to go out late at night. They're fleeing Baltimore, by the way, and they're heading to red states, so many of them. And Kim Strassel brings this out on all the big gerrymandering story from last week or the week before. She's like the greater danger, looking at it farther down the road for Democrats, is when they take the next census. That happens at the end of every decade. And all these red states gain more seats just because their population increases. Skip ahead to Strassel. This is clip 13.
This is the bigger problem for Democrats in the long term. They can take all these moves right now and try to combat what Republicans are doing in Texas. But the trends are, and if you just look at the first 4 years, so 2020 to 2024 of this next coming census cycle, you have seen massive outflows from California, New York, Illinois. There was an estimate done by the Brennan Center that estimates that, you know, there's going to be a shift of 10 seats away from Democrats and two currently Republican-run states in this next census. So if Democrats really wanted to improve their chances of maintaining or taking back the House, they would be thinking about their home state policies on high taxes, homelessness, crime, poor education, the minimum wage, etc., what is what causing people to flee.
As many, forget about the five seats in Texas that are going to flip over to the red side because of the Republicans doing what Democrats have mastered. I mean, they are the experts when it comes to gerrymandering, creating these crazy looking districts in Illinois, in California, in Massachusetts. I think Massachusetts, I think every single one of their House seats is blue. So it's like, if you just go by that, it's like it's 100% blue. Then you break it down into the percentages, and they're like 40% red, but the seats they win in Massachusetts don't show it. They get zero. And Illinois, it's drawn the same way. Same with California. And so Texas, they're just trying to catch up with the way that Democrats organize their states as far as districts are concerned. J.D. Vance was asked about this in his sit-down with Kristen Welker yesterday, and he pushes back, as he should. This is clip number 17.
All we're doing, frankly, is trying to make the situation a little bit more fair on a national scale. The Democrats have gerrymandered their states really aggressively. We think there are opportunities to push back against that, and that's really all we're doing.
And yet, Mr. Vice President, you were able to win the House and the Senate in 2024, why can't you do it again without adding additional
seats? But this is a very important question, Kristen. We had way fewer House seats than we should have. One, if the Democrats hadn't aggressively gerrymandered, and two, if illegal aliens weren't counted in the census for purposes of apportioning congressional seats. The best estimates I've seen is that in California, for example, has five additional congressional seats than it should have, because they count illegal aliens for the purpose of apportioning representatives. Meanwhile, Ohio, my home state, lost a representative. We're literally losing representatives for American citizens in order to give congressional representation to illegal aliens. Republicans are trying to balance out the scales a little bit for basic fairness and for the integrity of our democracy, which the president cares about as much as anybody in the country.
Boom, there you go. That's a good response. Well, why do you need to gerrymander? I mean, you barely won in the last election. And Vance's point is, yeah, we should have won even more. We won in a landslide. But because of the way you gerrymander and because of counting illegal aliens, it was close. It shouldn't have been close as far as House seats go. So you can see why they're screaming fascism. I mean, the tables have fully turned, as I keep saying on this show. And it seemed, here again, I keep going back to that statement the president gave to Lee Smith in his book from last year. I had no voice. That was 4 years ago. The dear leader had shut him down. The dear leader blotted out Donald Trump. And he had the help of Zuckerberg, and he had the help of Twitter and all them. But now look at how things are changing. Cracker Barrel changes its logo and its setup, and there's just an immediate backlash. It doesn't pay to go woke, as many have said. Those companies or establishments are going broke, and so are the media outlets. Like MS Now, soon to be MS Then. It's not going to be around for much longer. Listen, just coming back to crime and what President Trump wants to do, not just with D.C., but with big cities right across America. This is clip two.
President Trump's crime crackdown sweeping the nation. After deploying the National Guard to Washington, D.C., now the White House plans to extend its effort across 19 states, all with the goal of curbing crime and supporting immigration enforcement.
We're going to make our cities very, very safe. Chicago's a mess. You have an incompetent mayor, grossly incompetent. And we'll straighten that one out probably next. So I think Chicago will be our next, and then we'll help with New York.
So Chicago and New York, Kevin. Now, for context, last year, the murder rate in D.C. was on par with Chicago and nearly four times higher than Los Angeles and nearly six times higher than New York, as you can see there.
Chicago is like a war zone. We'll talk more about war, because whether it's in the cities or nation against nation, this is our latest Trumpet magazine, by the way. Arming for World War III. I mean, Politico's got a story. Just today, I'll get to it a little bit later, on the five conflicts that could happen in the next 5 years. You can see why you need the Trumpet, because they're a little bit off over at Politico. No offense, but they don't have the sure word of Bible prophecy. But the spirit of this age, Jesus described it in the Olivet Prophecy. Paul described it in 2 Timothy 3. It's the spirit of war, of murder. And that's because the God of this world is the father of murder. John 8 and verse 44. Here's another one from Fox News on the crime crackdown, clip 3.
So let's talk about what's happening with the crackdown in D.C. crime. And we see the huge presence of the National Guard. Four or five states have put their National Guard members into the more high-trafficked areas, allowing the cops to go into the more challenging areas and make some big-time arrests. Look at these totals.
Yeah, look at the numbers. Over 910 total arrests. This is just since August 7th. Five known gang members, MS-13 members, 101 firearms have been seized and taken off the streets. 49 homeless encampments have been cleared away.
And Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson is very upset about this.
Why? Why would he be upset?
Because he's worried about tyranny, he says. All the talk of Trump sending the National Guard to Chicago, and this is what he had to say.
Well, again, you know, the city of Chicago does not need a military-occupied state. That's not who we are. Here's the bottom line. They don't have police power. There's nothing they can do. You know, these are federal troops. They do not go through the training that our police officers go through. So they cannot even enact police authority. We're not going to surrender our humanity to this tyrant. I can tell you this. The city of Chicago has a long history of standing up against tyranny, resisting those who wish to undermine the interests of working people. We're not going to back down. We're not going to cower. We're not going to bend. We're not going to break. We are Chicago. We are the soul of America, and we will maintain that posture from now until.
You know, we can have all kinds of debates, constitutional debates, all kinds of debates about sending federal troops into cities like this. But to worry about tyranny and not be concerned about the tyranny of lawlessness and the tyranny of crime that all of his residents live under.
Isn't it amazing? Just in listening to that, it's amazing to me how much Trump's policies and actions make his critics so delusional in their thinking. Here, Donald Trump, because he's just trying to bring peace to cities, he actually has some of these radical left-wing, you know, lovers of the summer of love, Black Lives Matter, all of that. He actually has these leaders, these city leaders coming out and saying, hey, our law enforcement officials are highly trained and skilled. I mean, we've got everything under control. There's nothing but law and order in our cities. And of course, the people, the residents, they're just like they did in D.C. They'll do the same thing in Chicago. There's already residents in the inner city of Chicago, Black residents, that are urging Donald Trump to take action. That's right. That's right. I mean, all through the summer of love, you had officials just like the one you saw there. All through the years of the Dear Leader, for that matter. You had officials, high-ranking officials, saying that the police were the problem. The police were the cause of everything wrong in our big cities. And now Trump has them so deranged in their thinking, in their reasoning. And in this case, I mean, They're talking about the police as if it's a good thing. Well, where was that back in 2020 when they needed to be defunded? Or in the years of the Dear Leader when he said they're all racist? Now they say Trump's the racist because he's sending in the National Guard. And of course, they're not trained. They can't, I mean, they can barely function. They go in, the statistics tell you all that you need to know, and the people rejoice. It's just like the proverb says, you get some good leadership, you get some righteous leadership. In this case, I mean, it's taking action. Now, as I said last week, sending the National Guard, it, just looking at the bigger picture of it and considering the spirit of our age, the fact that you have to send in the National Guard, it's not a good sign of a morally upright people or a morally upright way of living. It's actually a very bad sign. It says to us that it is so bad. The homicides, the crime, the carjackings. I mean, it's so bad that we've got to send in the army. And nothing is being done with respect to that immoral sickness. And that's something we touch on this show quite often. But just coming back to showing some force in these blue cities. Here's Jennings, Scott Jennings, I think it is, on CNN, clip 11.
Well, he's more popular at this point in his second term than Barack Obama was in his, and he's more popular today than Joe Biden was in his. And so I disagree. I don't think Donald Trump's all that unpopular by historical standards, recent historical standards. And at the same time, I don't agree that his agenda is unpopular. I think the big, beautiful bill is going to help people all over the country, and it invested in ICE agents so that we can continue to crack down on the immigration problem. I think Democrats here are squealing. Because a Republican president is showing up in blue cities, places that have been run for decades by Democrats that are overrun with violent crime and overrun with illegal immigration, and they've done nothing about it. And even worse, they have encouraged it with soft on crime local policies. And so the real issue here is political. It's just that Democrats are being exposed as being crappy at running big cities, and Donald Trump is showing up to show the people there, hey, it doesn't have to be this way. And oh, by the way, if we bring down the rates of violence and the rates of illegal immigration, that'll be a great thing to go along with it.
You wonder when the election cycle comes around, if not, you know, next year, maybe 2 years after that. I mean, if time were to go on long enough, how much longer would it take? Again, you look at some of these blue cities and you think, well, you voted for these leaders. The Democrat machine has been in power for decades. But how much of that is because of the corruption, of the stealing, the lying? I mean, look, if they can gerrymander their way to victory in California and Illinois, or count illegals in California so that it takes away a seat in Ohio, what would they do in downtown Chicago or Philadelphia or Houston to make sure that they get 90% of the vote every single time, even as the cities crumble, even as the cities fall apart? You know, the spirit, going back to what J.D. Vance said there, the spirit of these Democrats to for decades carefully gerrymander everything so that they can squeeze another blue seat out of their state. It's cheating. And those that argue that Trump is responding to cheating with cheating, there's a lot of truth to it. My point is this. If they cheat with counting illegals, with gerrymandering, with everything else, you think they wouldn't cheat in 2020? How insane was it for some of those commentators, even government officials, to say that everything about this election, 2020, I mean, was perfect? We need to play the Chris Krebs clip on a continuous loop for one show. It's like staring at this dumpster fire and saying, well, I mean, we actually saw that happen in 2020, didn't we? Yeah, everything's peaceful. Everything worked perfectly. Everything was perfect. You know they cheated on a massive scale when they're able to use COVID as a pretext to mass mail in ballots And then you see this time around when, again, he needs congressional support, President Trump, but this time around he's signing, you know, executive orders saying we're going to get rid of mail-in ballots, and they start squealing and screaming again. Because they know. They know what it takes for them to win. And that's why they like them some cheating so much. Every single cycle. It's all over the place. It's not just that these cities have a large black population and it's a race thing and Donald Trump's going in there because it's a black mayor. These big cities have so much corruption because of the Democrat Party. And I'm not here suggesting that the Republican Party is perfect or righteous. But my father makes the point in America Under Attack, right? What we're seeing and the way that they went after Donald Trump is what they're willing to do to maintain their hold, their grip, their stranglehold on power. And for the longest time, I mean, they had it. I mean, you can look at Donald Trump's first term as maybe a temporary, you know, break from that. But really, if you look at his first term and how he was attacked nonstop, I mean, he could barely function. It's a miracle that he was able to even do anything. But before that, 8 years of the Dear Leader, 4 years of a fake presidency. And those 4 years, just like my father said, they brought Donald Trump back in a stronger position. Because there was so much bitter affliction. Just as 2 Kings 14 says. So much affliction. Listen to President Trump. This is just today. And here again, people across the country, I'm sure, when they hear this, they're rejoicing. But the people over at MS Now and Then, they're not rejoicing. They see this as dangerous. Listen to clip 16.
It's going to be... If you burn a flag, you get 1 year in jail, no early exits, no nothing. You get 1 year in jail. If you burn a flag, you get. And what it does is incite to riot. I hope they use that language, by the way. Did they?
Yeah, incitement.
Incite to riot. And you burn a flag, you get 1 year in jail. You don't get 10 years. You don't get 1 month. You get 1 year in jail, and it goes on your record.
It's like a loving father, a grandfather. Telling the family, the kids, this is the way it's going to be. I mean, we need more of that. Sam sent me a quote the other day from Herbert Armstrong. He was talking about setting up Ambassador College back in 1947. And he said, you know, we were so small. I knew we needed a college, but we didn't have all the resources, the funding. Started in an old, you know, library building, just 4 students. And he had to bring in professors from the world. And as soon as they went to work, putting together the curriculum and so on, they didn't want any of that religious stuff that Herbert Armstrong would preach. So they tried to squeeze him out. And Mr. Armstrong, in writing to the church, said, I had to put my foot down. I went back to the 3-hour class I had set up. I made them, those professors with the PhDs, I made them sit and squirm through every one of my Bible lectures. They hated it. And Mr. Armstrong actually used the word dominate. I mean, it is good to dominate when you've got God and the Word behind you. Now, obviously, God is a God of tremendous love and mercy and kindness, but love is the fulfilling of God's law. And law is the law. You've got to have law and order, whether you look at it spiritually or physically. And in the case of the nation, we're seeing some law and order. And as he said there, President Trump, people are going to stop burning flags. Of course they will. They're not going to want to go to jail for a year for doing something stupid like that. And anti-American on top. But yeah, it's incitement to riot. How refreshing is that? This is from Fox News. President Donald Trump on Monday is expected to sign an executive order aiming to end cashless bail for suspects arrested in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we're going to stop this revolving door where they get arrested and then they're just out on cashless bail the next day. Well, how refreshing is that? Now, if you get arrested, you're going to stay in jail. There again. There again is the father, so to speak, of a family saying these are the rules of the house. And the lawless, rebellious, insurrectionists, they hate it. And so they kick and scream. They fight against it. They do everything they can to resist in whatever way they can. In whatever way they can, now being in the minority. Now being so, as the Inton guy said from CNN, so unpopular. It's a perfect symbol. Cracker Barrel, Democrat Party. There you go. You see all the heads explode over the weekend, too, on the raid of John Bolton's house. I touched on that Friday. But how hilarious is that? To see the talking heads. Suddenly, they're big fans of John Bolton. You know, the one that President Trump says loves wars. He loves to start wars. Like I said, Trump's policies, his administration, his DOJ, it really does delude the thinking and the reasoning skills of these Democrats who are now screaming. Well, this means the DOJ has been weaponized. Hello? Have you been paying attention for the last 10 years? Listen to this exchange with Abby Phillips and her guest, clip 7.
This idea that this was a weaponized, these were all these different prosecutions and all these different jurisdictions were not all directed from one place. There's absolutely no evidence of that. You guys can tell me what evidence you have of that, but I've never seen it and I've never heard anybody
The Obama and Biden administrations didn't politicize the DOJ.
Okay, who?
Oh, I mean, come on. You could, I mean, they were better at hiding who it was or not transparent.
I'm just saying,
we know who
if you are making the claim that this was directed by some kind of puppeteer
There's
at the top of the pyramid, who is that person?
So how did the IRS only go after conservative groups?
They didn't.
You're not answering my question. Who is the person?
I know, right?
Who are they?
I'm talking about the conservatives that Obama and Biden.
There's no proof. I'm sorry.
I'd love to just jump in on one of those panels. Just because even the response from this lady on the other side, I don't know who she is, but, the IRS did go after conservative groups. But if I was on there, I'd say they tried to assassinate Donald Trump. And then there's the host. Well, who specifically did it? Was there one man behind it? The deep state was run by the dear leader, thoroughly, completely weaponized, top to bottom. Lawfare, assassins, bullets, impeachment hearings. Adam Schiff, I saw the evidence. Yes, he's guilty. There is collusion with Russia. And these people can actually sit there today and say, well, we never saw any evidence of any kind of weaponized DOJ before Trump came along. You can see why their reporting is so ridiculously, in an unhinged way, biased. They're the propaganda arm of the Democrat Party, of the Dear Leader's Party. Now, he's been silenced, as we've said. His party is not popular. I mean, even that Harry Enten piece where he's talking about, you know, Cracker Barrel and the Democrats, that's just more proof of prophecy being fulfilled. Because it really speaks to the man behind the party who had been there since 2008. I mean, he came in as the Messiah. And some of these agencies didn't even start until the Dear Leader came along, or the ones that happened or were put in place after 9/11. And Obama came in there as an angel of light and just made sure it was stacked top to bottom with good Democrats, loyal to the party. And now the tables have turned. As I say, they're rushing to the defense of John Bolton, of all people, because his house was raided. How can you how can you not see that this is, I mean, this is Trump weaponizing the DOJ? I mean, there's people on MS Now and Then saying this. It's really unbelievable to watch. Listen to President Trump in the Oval Office. I think this was today, clip 18.
But my house was raided also, called Mar-a-Lago. They went through everything they could, including my young son's room and my wife's area. They went through her drawers, as the expression goes. They went through everything you can imagine. And when she came back, she looked, she said, she's very neat, you know, she's meticulous. And she looked and she said, whoa, this wasn't the way that she had it. So, you know, so I know the feeling. It's not a good feeling.
They didn't even reorganize Melania's space after they raided Trump's house, Mar-a-Lago, 3 years ago. How, and then they're defending Bolton. I don't know what Bolton did. I haven't read enough about it. I mean, it's about classified documents. I guess I've read enough. He evidently was emailing his wife, his daughter. Yeah. And we played the montage for you Friday. Bolton 3 years ago waxing eloquent about how careless Donald Trump was or is with classified documents. Well, at least he was a president who had access to classified documents and also the power to declassify, the authority to declassify, which he said that he did. But that didn't stop 40 FBI agents from raiding Mar-a-Lago. What about this raid of John Bolton's house in Maryland? Well, Trump says, what about the raid on my house? And Trump's even said, I don't have anything to do with what Pam Bondi's doing. He's not a big fan of Bolton, though. And we don't know what they're saying behind the scenes or who he's on the phone with. But when the tables turn, I mean, you see their true colors. You see their heart for what it is. It's like I keep saying in the fundamentals of theology class. I mean, these lawless agents that got control of the Worldwide Church of God in 1986 and all of their excuses in the late 80s, early 90s when they said, hey, we're really not changing anything. Just making a few tweaks. Just made a few edits to Mr. Armstrong's writings. We reduced a few pages, in some cases 150, but it's a lot cheaper. It's a lot cheaper to print a tiny little booklet that says nothing instead of having a message that Herbert Armstrong wanted to give to the world. Well, they went with that changes what changes response until it was so obvious that they were insurrectionists. And they said at the end, hey, yeah, we overturned everything. Because, see, they got total control. They did not tolerate any dissent. They fired my father in 1989. Yeah, that's what they did with anybody that would dare disagree. And then they just ran the church into the ground. And what are they doing today? Here, Herbert Armstrong in the last year of his life, think about this. God inspires him in December of 1985 to, or I guess it would have been 84, to work on this book, Mystery of the Ages. And he gets it done. It's like, what, 300 pages? He gets it done in 6 months. 6 months. He's 93, virtually blind. Now, he did have a lifelong ministry proclaiming the message of this book. So, I mean, it was all there in his mind. But still, he had to assemble all the pages and get the editing and everything done. It's remarkable what God was helping him do at the age of 93. And then he says to the church when it's finished and he can hand it out, he's like, this is the most valuable gift that I could give to you because you've been co-laborers with me in this labor of love. I mean, just compare that, the spirit of that, to the spirit of the Tkach people. And today, I mean, they made off like bandits. Where are they today? What are they doing? Some of these individuals that destroyed the church are still in their 60s, 70s. I mean, they're not 93. They might have a decade or two left of life. And what are they doing? Who are they giving to? What message are they proclaiming? They just destroyed the church. And then that's the end of the story. For them, from their vantage point, not from ours. You can read Raising the Ruins to see what God has raised right back up. Another work. And it's been built the same way it was built in the days of old, just like it says in Amos 9. In the days that Mr. Armstrong did it, we've just looked to him and we've looked to the way he worked. And this campus, the college curriculum, everything is modeled on that foundation. And God's given us more and more truth along the way, which is just wonderful. It shows it shows us a lot about God and the spirit of him, his love. He just wants to give us everything. It's the most valuable gift that I could give to you. That's what Mr. Armstrong said in the final days of his life. What a wonderful spirit of sacrifice and service. I just wanted to touch on, just to shift gears here a little bit. This was in the Morning Brief. Mr. Hilliker writing on Vladimir Putin playing Donald Trump for all of his strengths. As we've noted on this program, negotiating peace deals is not, I mean, he's had some success in some ways, and I think Richard Palmer said this on Trumpet World Friday. I mean, you look around at some of the skirmishes that Donald Trump has gotten involved in and solved, at least temporarily. But with this, it's different because, you know, he's dealing with the Prince of Rosh. And Putin is a dictator running a police state. And he lies and he steals and he cheats and he murders the opposition. And he may well be if Elon Musk is to be believed, he may well be the richest man in the world. Signs are becoming clearer that all the muscle Trump is applying to the Ukraine-Russia peace effort isn't swaying Putin's mind one iota. It says, in response, the White House is sending mixed signals, both frustrated and optimistic, not having yet conceded that this process is doomed. And all the Trump people were on the Sunday talk shows yesterday. J.D. Vance was, still saying, I think Russia has... You know, I think they have made some concessions. I still feel like there's hope for this. But again, aren't we just a week removed when every European leader, every major one, was just in the White House a week ago? And of course, Donald Trump was working fast. A few days before that, he's in Alaska with Putin himself. And then he's saying, hey, we got Zelensky and Putin agreeing to come together. That's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. But now, you know, that's been downplayed because nothing firm is set. And so here we go again. Mr. Hilliker says here, Putin is highly skilled at telling people what they want to hear and then doing what he wants to do. That's the way Putin operates. It's the way he's always operated. With an American president convinced of his personal ability to solve anything and eager to cement his legacy as a peacemaker and a team of diplomats with little experience and a lot of credulity, Putin has a lot of leverage. He does. And it quotes Owen Matthews at The Spectator. I guess I have a little bit of time for that. Well, actually, let me just move forward. I want to save... What do we have? 6 minutes and 40 seconds for the latest installment from the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. But with the last few minutes I have, I just want to refer you again to the latest issue of The Trumpet. If you're not a subscriber, there's no cost, no obligation. 10 issues of this every year sent to your mailbox, totally free. We pay the postage even. The 800 number, you can see it there, 1-866-930-3024. And the headline of this September issue of the Trumpet magazine, Arming for World War III. That's what we're seeing. And as I always point out, I mean, these issues are prepared a month, sometimes 2 months in advance, and then they land in mailboxes, and then they are so timely. I mean, it's even more so, I guess, with our website because it goes up immediately. But even when the printed issue appears in mailboxes, you get articles like this coming out in Politico. The next five wars, the next five wars. Here's Politico saying it, this could happen. There you go. Five wars that experts fear could start in the next 5 years. So here come the experts. Don't we need more of them? The experts to tell us the hot spots. I mean, this, just to back up for a second, this is the spirit of the age we live in. Jesus himself said, wars and rumors of wars. I mean, this would be just the beginning. In other words, it's not going to get better. Politico says this year has already seen two of the world's most watched potential conflicts erupt into a reality, with missiles flying over the India-Pakistan border in May, and then in June, Israel going to war with Iran. Well, you can go over to Politico and read a little bit more, but just to sum up, the five wars they predict, or that they say could happen in the next 5 years: India, Pakistan, China, Taiwan, Russia, and the Baltic states, India versus China, and then North Korea versus South Korea. So there's maybe a little bit of accuracy with one or two of those, but for the most part, again, without the sure word of prophecy, they're in darkness. They're in darkness. Jesus told us how it would unfold in these last days. Paul said it would be perilous. And like I said earlier, whether it's the war in the streets of America, the big city streets, or wars between big nations, of course, we know, based on the sure word of prophecy, we know about looking at the heart of Europe, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. We understand about the clash between the king of the north and the king of the south. We know all about the civil war that God prophesies in Israelite nations, particularly America. We know about the Psalm 83 alliance. And we know about the Asian conglomerate that's going to be headed up by Putin. Where, as you heard on the Trumpet World Friday, you know, India is going to come together with China, with Russia. As I say, it's all outlined in Bible prophecy for us. If I have time, maybe tomorrow I can give you a clip that was just interesting to me to see Douglas Murray and Jordan Peterson. We have clips of them often, conservative thinkers, and we look at some of Murray's comments more frequently, particularly with his solid views on what's happening in Israel and in the Middle East. But to hear both of them talking about the Bible, specifically Isaiah's prophecy, here again, it just makes you appreciate what God has given to us in his church, that he's opened our minds to understand the truth of the gospel. Speaking of truth, I think Friday's installment, it was about 10 minutes, and it took you through some of the promises God made to Abraham, taking you through Genesis 12, 13, I think Genesis 15 and 17. So today's installment, I think it's maybe part four, that continues on from where we left off at the end of Friday's show. So it might take you just a little bit over, not too much, so we won't charge anything either way. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.
Even most Christians do not realize the importance of these promises to Abraham, and even fewer realize that the Bible draws a sharp distinction that separates these two promises into two types. One type of promise is spiritual, for Abraham's descendants to include one seed who would be a blessing to all families of the earth. The other type of promise is physical, for Abraham's descendants to become a great nation along with a great company of nations. These two types of promises can be called the scepter promise and the birthright promise. The scepter refers to Jesus Christ. The Bible promised a Savior who would die for all human beings and who would ultimately come to rule the world. The birthright refers to Abraham's descendants becoming great nations. Abraham wanted God to pass the scepter promise and the birthright promise on to his son Ishmael. God replied that Ishmael would become a great nation, a combative nation, located east of Abraham's other descendants. But it was those other descendants to the west who would receive the far greater scepter promise and birthright promise. Not the descendants of Ishmael, but the descendants of Isaac. Isaac, at the end of his life, planned for the promises to go to his son Esau. Esau did become a great nation, but God gave the scepter promise and the birthright promise not to Esau, but to Jacob. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. He had 12 sons who became the patriarchs of the 12 tribes of Israel. And at this point, the scepter promise and the birthright promise became separated. For Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler, but the birthright was Joseph's. Judah and Joseph were two of Israel's 12 sons, and right here, the Bible splits the scepter promise and the birthright promise between them. The Savior, who would ultimately rule the world, would descend from Judah. The great nations would descend from Joseph. The Bible adds even more detail. The Bible specifically records that Israel actually adopted two of his grandsons, the sons of Joseph. He prayed, "Let my name, Israel, be named on them." There is no hidden meaning here. Israel legally adopted these two sons and gave them his name, Israel. He did not do that for his other grandsons. To these two sons, he passed on not the scepter promise, but the birthright promise. These two sons would become great nations. These two sons would together grow into a great multitude. And who were these two sons of Joseph? Adopted sons of Israel who would become great nations? Manasseh and Ephraim. But there is even more detail here. Comparing these details against history will show that the Bible is either invalid or amazingly accurate. The birthright was now split from the scepter. But now the birthright itself split. Joseph's eldest son was Manasseh. He was in line to receive the greater blessing. But Israel crossed his arms to place his right hand on the younger son, Ephraim. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. A multitude of nations. That means a company of nations. Manasseh would become a great nation, but Ephraim would become an even greater group of nations. These are specific details for how the birthright promise would be kept. And here is one more distinct detail. Israel later called all 12 of his sons to him. He told them about that which shall befall you in the last days. Talking about the future, the last days, Israel said this, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come." The promise of a Savior for all families of the earth would remain with Judah right up until the coming of Shiloh, the Messiah. And notice this statement about Joseph in the last days. Joseph is a fruitful bough whose branches run over the wall. the descendants of Joseph, specifically the descendants of his sons Ephraim and Manasseh, would extend past their boundaries. They would be a colonizing people, a savior who would descend from Judah, great nations who would descend from Joseph, nations that colonize, nations that include a multitude of people, and even a multitude of nations. Nations that dwell to the west, nations that exist in the last days. These are promises. These are specific claims of the Bible. 4,000 years have now passed. Were those promises fulfilled?